Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. Hey, is there really any money in blogging? Well, joining me today is a blogger who turned his love of travel into a profitable business, and I think he's an example of how, yes, there is good money in blogging. Matt Kepnes is better known as Nomadic Matt Online. His site is nomadicmatt.com. It teaches people how to take their dream trip on a budget. He's also the author of How to Travel the World on $50 a Day, Travel Cheaper, Longer, Smarter. I invited him to talk about how he built up his business, how he got the book deal, and to talk about the specifics of how you can turn a blog into an actual profitable business. This whole thing is sponsored by Top Talent. If you're having trouble finding developers, even if it's WordPress developers, if you want the best of the best, TopTal is a network of elite, pre-vetted software developers who have the proven skills. They're in the top 3% among their peers globally. You tell TopTal what you're looking for. They search their network for the best people who fit your individual needs. They test the candidates, and then they present you with only the best candidates who meet your needs. Then you get to hire them. Once you pick someone, you can start work with them the next day. Maybe it's 40 hours a week, maybe it's 20 hours a week, maybe it's a little less, whatever you need. And here's something that is a really gutsy thing that they do. They offer a no-risk trial period. What other developer shop, what other place can you get a developer who's top of the top at no risk to you? Go to toptal.com, T-O-P-T-A-L.com. Get the best of the best right now. Matt, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, Matt, I'm new with this sponsor. You are someone who's worked with developers. Before I ask you questions about your business, what did you think of the way that I did that sponsorship message?
That's pretty good. I like the no-risk guarantee because the worst thing you can do is have a developer that's not very good, and then you're on the hook for all this money.
Yeah. So, all right, good.
I like to pay for results, not anything else.
You know, for a long time, all I wanted to do was just do a great interview here, pull out the key ideas from my guests and do it, just focus on that. And advertising was not the main focus. But now I realize selling is always important. It's always important. And so if I'm going to make it important, I don't just want it to be at the top of the interview. I want it to keep improving and improving and improving. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying is pay attention to that that guarantee. That goes a long way.
Yeah.
All right. And we'll talk to you in a bit about how you do a guarantee. But first, let me ask you this. What kind of revenue are you doing with Nomadic Matt?
A little under $500,000 a year.
Half a million in sales?
Yeah.
Okay.
Gross revenue.
Where does that come from?
I run tours. I have a number of electronic guides from how to blog to destination guides such as Nomadic Matt's Guide to New York, as well as lots of affiliate marketing and once in a little while, I do some consulting.
Let me break that down here. What's the top of all of those, biggest revenue generator?
The affiliate sales.
The affiliate sales, where you sell other people's stuff.
Right. So you would come to my website and book your trip, you know, to Hong Kong. And through my links, I would get a portion of the revenue from the flight, from the hotel, travel insurance.
I see. Just like everyone else, from HipMonk all the way up to Travelocity and Priceline.
Exactly.
Okay, so affiliates number one. What's number two?
My ebooks.
Your ebook. And your ebooks sell for peanuts.
Yeah.
What are we talking about? $20, right?
Yeah, between $4.99 and $24.99.
That's really small. And we'll talk later, hopefully, about why the prices. All right, so ebooks number two. What's number three?
The tours I run. So a couple times a year, I take groups of 10 to 12 people on the tour. I do two in Europe. And one in Thailand.
Okay.
I might do an Australia one. But
and you go along with them and you show them a good time that they get the kind of experience that they get to read about on your site.
Right, right. So we're living how I travel. Right. So I take them with me. We stay in my favorite hostels. We take local transportation. We go to my favorite restaurants, do my favorite activities. We're seeing the world through
hostels.
My eyes. Yes.
One of the best parts about going to a place and staying at a hostel is that you get to date. You get to sleep with people at the hostel. Does that happen?
With me? No, I don't do that. But
no, your customers.
If they do, they have not told me yet.
Really?
So I'll just let them keep that private.
All right. How many people go on this trip?
So between 10 and 12.
10 and 12. So. All right. So tour is number three. What's number four?
I do a little bit of phone consulting and speaking throughout the year.
You get paid to speak?
Occasionally, once in a while. But that probably brings in, you know, $5,000 to $6,000 a year. Not a lot of money.
Okay.
All
right. So that's almost insignificant if you're talking about roughly $500,000 in revenue. And then the book is making you some money. Royalties, right?
Right. So How to Travel the World on $50 a day. You know, I hit my advance, so I'm now starting to generate royalties on it. So this year, depending on the second edition does, you can see a nice boost in revenue.
The second edition is what's coming out 2015. By the time this is up, people have an opportunity to buy it. How to Travel the World on $50 a day. What kind of advance do you get for a book like that?
In travel, you don't get a huge advance because it's such a narrow niche. I got in the mid five figures. I don't really want to give an exact number, but it was good enough for me. But I'm also the philosophy that I would rather have a smaller advance and start getting royalties sooner than have this gigantic $200,000 advance and never see any money ever again.
You hired Ryan Holiday. Frankly, that's the only reason why. I wasn't going to do an interview this week. I was taking some time off to just sit and clear things up. They said, Matt's on the schedule. I said, great, can we please move him? They said, Matt came through Ryan. I said, fuck, I'm going to come at night if I have to. I will do it.
Yeah.
What do you pay Ryan for that kind of experience? He opens doors like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, so I met Ryan last year, and we've become friends, and so I hired him to help me with this book launch. He's paying the five figures, but I don't really want to tell an exact number.
Oh, he's paying the five figures?
No, I'm paying him.
Oh, you're paying him five figures. Got you. But you don't want to say how much.
Yeah.
And what does Ryan get? Beyond the fact that he has incredible friendships with people like me who will do anything for him, what more practically does he give you?
Well, Ryan's really good at thinking about strategy and where we need to go, what website should we be on, how should we frame your promotion, you know, a lot of this book tour that I'm doing, and the idea of traveling around the country on $50 a day and sort of living my book came through Ryan.
I see. So you're doing a book tour and you're actually going to live on $50 a day?
Yes.
Okay. So, what else has he given you that helps shape the way that you present the book?
He edits a lot of the guest posts I plan on doing, so. Because he's just really good at crafting words.
Do you have an example of how he changed one of your words or how he changed a message that you wrote and made it better?
I did a guest post on Tim Ferriss's website last year. Mm-hmm. And I handed it to Ryan, and Ryan just came back and was like, add in all these details. You know, so Ryan's really good at getting me to get the details out. Because when you're an expert, you know everything. So you make leaps in people's assumptions about knowledge when you're writing because you make that gap. So you don't always put in all the details that a newbie might need to know. So Ryan's good at picking that out for me.
I see. All right. I try to do that as an interviewer. And you're right. People who do often don't remember the details of what they do and how they do it. And they can't put themselves back in the frame of mind of someone who has no understanding of how it's done.
Right. You know, it becomes a habit for you. It's just subconsciously ingrained in your mind. So if you write it down, you will make those leaps.
All right. I want to understand how you got here. It all started back when you were working at a hospital, right?
Yeah.
Just before you got into blogging. What were you doing at a hospital?
After college, I graduated and found myself an unemployed high school history teacher. So I got a job at a hospital, just something that came up, and I did administrative work in the surgical department as an executive assistant to the vice chair. I also worked in oncology doing administrative work there. So that was about 4 years, and I decided I think I'm going to go travel the world for a year. And that was 8 years ago.
8 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm just putting a note here to come back and ask you about your drip email so that I think the way you sell is simple, but it's really effective, and I want to study it. But I don't want to start from how did you get to where you are. I don't want to start with how you got to $500,000 in revenue, give or take.
Yeah.
I want to know how you started with your first sale and built it up and built it up, and then the drip campaign will make more sense. All right, so you're working there. What got you on this path? Was it a trip that you took?
Yeah, so I went to Thailand in January 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And while we were there, my friend and I, we were in this little town, and I was in a bus going up to this temple in the north, in a city called Chiang Mai. And in there, I'm meeting a Belgian couple and three Canadians. And we all got to talking about how long we're in Thailand, what are our travel plans. And they were all gone for a very long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
When we got to me, how long are you here for? 2 weeks. Wait, that's it? Yeah, well, you know, as an American, I only get 2 weeks vacation a year. So they're like, wait, back up. You use your entire vacation in January? Yep. So it got me thinking about how we get the short end of the stick sometimes in the States. And the next day, we were at this cooking class, and I ran into them again. I thought, well, this is fate. So I peppered them with some more questions. A week later, I turned to my friend Scott and said, hey, when we get home, I'm going to quit my job, finish my MBA, and go travel the world for a year. And I did that. I finished a master's degree because I thought I was going to go back into business. And I just kind of never came home.
You just kept traveling and traveling.
And just kept traveling.
All right. And you were trying to make some money along the way. You had some AdSense sites.
Yeah. So the original fund I had saved up lasted about a year and a half. I came home to see my sister graduate, you know, tried to get a temp job, realized I hated going back into the office. So I just took off again, and that's when I started getting into the blogging space. So I built my website. Then I started really getting into internet marketing because my original goal was, how can I keep traveling more? And
what's the shadiest site that you built back when you were trying to make some money?
The shadiest website.
Shadiest.
I would say how to take care of your pet turtle.
That's not so shady. What made it shady?
Oh, it was just, I mean, I didn't even write the site. It was total spam. You know, it was just there to exist for you to click on links.
I see. That took you out to AdSense sites.
Yeah.
And how did you get traffic to it?
At the time, you know, SEO was a lot easier to game. So I just bought a bunch of links to it. So I once had a site on goldfish.
Uh-huh.
Training your beagle. That was actually a legit site. I got an actual dog trainer to write the content.
Okay. What kind of money could you make from building these sites back in the day?
I was pulling in about $3,000 or $4,000 a month.
Total.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah, I had about 10 of these, you know, whatever the keyword was. And for me, I was just trying to travel more. So that was really good because you can travel easily on $3,000 or $4,000 a month.
Yeah.
I was trying to build up my freelance writing portfolio. So this was meant to be supplemental income while that happened.
I see. Yeah, I know when I was backpacking through Europe not too long ago, $50 a day would have been more than enough.
Yeah.
And you have to do it right, but you could do it $50 a day. I felt like I could live like this forever. There's no stopping me.
And you can.
Yeah.
And you can.
But I also dated on those trips. You apparently didn't. Well, you didn't meet any women in any of these hostels?
I did have some girlfriends along the way.
I did too. It was romance like in the movies. You know, you're on a train, you want to meet someone. Didn't exactly happen on a train, but yeah, it was fantastic. Once in a hostel. Woman was reading a book. I asked her about her book. We started a conversation. We started dating. Next thing I know, we're traveling through Europe for a little bit.
Yeah, that's how I met a girl at in Southeast Asia. We were at a hostel. We started talking, and 4 months later, we're traveling together.
Yeah, you're kind of shoved in almost like shoved in together with all kinds of people who you wouldn't get to know otherwise. It was one guy who was just hitchhiking through the U.S. who came to Europe for a little bit, who taught me how to roll cigarettes. Another person who's really uptight and thought because she was 30 years old, she couldn't go out after 10 o'clock because just too old for that, you know? Get to meet all these different kinds of people, and some of them you connect, other people just disappear.
Yeah, and when you're in that setting, there's no past. There's just now.
Yeah.
Meet people unencumbered because there's no baggage. Nobody cares who you were or what you did in your previous life. They just want to know, do you want to go get a beer right now or not?
Right, Right. Do you want to go and check out the city? And there's always something new to do and something to talk about because it's a brand new experience for you. Just not getting lost is something to talk about.
Yeah.
It's a really fun experience. I used to think that it was just a waste of time. Why would anyone travel like that? When they could be working, when they could be making more money, when they could be making more impact. And then I realized, no, there's a romance to it. And it's a romance about meeting someone. It's also a romance about really getting to connect with yourself. What's it like when you're meeting a whole bunch of people and you're kind of too chicken to talk to some of them, but you have to, and how do you deal with that?
It's sink or swim. I mean, I have some of my best friends in the world I've met through traveling. And even though I might not see them for 3 or 4 years, when we get back together, we just pick up because you form this bond because you're with that person for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So you either have to really like them or you're not going to become friends with them.
That's why when my wife and I started dating, I said, we have to go backpack somewhere. Let's see how we do. We're fully backpacking. We ended up picking out places to stay when the bus arrived. And I wanted to see, how do we work in a situation where we're together 24 hours a day, where the place where we go sleep and stay the night is who knows what it is or where it'll be or what it'll be like. And how do we handle those situations? It created a strong bond. It was romance plus more of a personal connection with the way that we handle the world.
Yeah. If you can travel with somebody, you're meant to be with that person.
I agree. Really, if you have any doubt, at least in my experience. All right. So I see how you're doing all this. Why give up all those other sites? If you're making a few thousand bucks a month and you're able to travel and do what you love, why give up the Turtle site and all those others?
Well, it wasn't really fun. Like, I wasn't passionate about it. I'm passionate about travel. I really love traveling. That was, you know, I started the website as a way to get freelance travel writing gigs because I like writing and I like travel. This other stuff was a means to an end. And one day I was having a conversation with my friend Mark, who said, why do you do all this? You know travel. Like, that's your expertise. You can just write forever and ever on travel. Why not build up your own website and get rid of all these sites that you don't really like doing, that take up your all day, every day? And I thought, it's a really good idea. And so I sort of phased those out over the course of about a year while I just focused in on the website.
And this is roughly 2010.
Yeah, so this would have been middle 2009, I began the shift to just focus on the website. And by 2010, a year later, that was the only thing I focused on.
And when you focused on it, was there enough revenue coming in from that business that you could give up all the others?
No. No, it took about a year to remake, you know, $3,000 to $5,000 a month. Which was is at the time enough for me to live on. You know, I have no home. I'm just traveling. You're making $60,000 a year. You're traveling on 20. Life is pretty good. You know. So, okay.
And when you're passionate about it, you feel like you can keep growing it. And when you're not passionate about Turtle sites, it's easy to let those dwindle away.
Yeah, I love working on my website. I love writing. I like doing the marketing for it. Figuring out what gets people to click on one page versus another page, talking about travel because I love my website.
I get that feeling. I do too.
Yeah.
All right. So then the next step was getting affiliates. What kind of affiliates did you get?
Yeah, but I just signed up through a lot of the Commission Junction, regular mass affiliate sales. You know, you go to Expedia's website, you click affiliate network, you sign up, you get a link. Nowadays, given the size of my site, I can sort of create my own custom commissions and affiliate links and programs. I only work with websites I use. So you're not going to find, you know, a luxury travel website on my site, even if they pay a great commission, or, you know, a tour operator I don't like, or just...
Do you work with them directly?
Yeah, I work with a lot of...
How do you get a company directly on the phone and start talking to them about an affiliate deal?
You do a lot of volume and become very well known in your space where they start paying attention to you.
I see. And all that happened for you when you were using Commission Junction and all those other big networks that they'll take just about anyone. If you have a real site and you're not a scammer, they're going to have you on board.
Yeah. Default links. And then as the site grew and I started getting known in the space and being able to contact these marketing people or meeting them at conferences, it was a lot easier to then say, hey, you know, I'm your affiliate, but I know I do a lot of volume. I have a big website. I can send a lot of referrals. Let's work out a special arrangement.
Okay. And these were all banner ads or buttons, right, on the site?
Yeah, I use text links now.
But I do remember in I do remember in the early days it was these square boxes on the site, top of the site somewhere. I'm going to Google it right now to see if I could find what it looked like. You know, the other thing I remember, a lot of links to copyright pages. Let me see if I could find one. Like, you'd have in your navigation, about me, my travel photos, and then copyright link. And the copyright link wasn't just copyright 2010 or whatever. It was pretty intense. If you're using this, please, do you know what I'm talking about? Do you remember?
Yeah, I used to have it up there. It's now in the footer. But, I mean, every site has a copyright link. But back in the day when I didn't know anything, I just included every page on the top navigation bar.
Oh, I see what it is. That when you have a WordPress site, it naturally will take whatever page you create and put it in the navigation bar. And you said, okay, that's what will happen.
Yeah, yeah. So I had, you know, home, about me, travel photos, contact, copyright, disclaimer. You know. It took me a couple of years to realize people don't really need to click on this stuff.
Yeah, it took prime real estate on the site. All right, but that gives me a sense of what you were coming from. Who built your first site?
I did.
Using what theme?
I didn't use a theme. I hand-coded my first website, which was annoying for my friends who were teaching me coding because I would always email them. I broke it. But I hand-coded it, and then I realized how dumb this was to keep up. So I moved into WordPress, you know, in 2008, a couple of months, like July 2008, a couple of months after I started. And I just got an out-of-the-box theme. I think my first one was StudioPress.
And then I had StudioPress, okay.
Yeah, whatever they were before they were the Genesis theme. And then I had somebody hand-code it and hand-design it a couple years ago for a custom theme.
Okay, and at one point you were using Woo themes.
Yeah.
I see.
But I really think of it.
Oh, now I see the old version of the site from 2008. Hand-coded, wow, that's pretty impressive, especially if you're new at it. And it even has an Add Me on MySpace button with a View guestbook link.
Ah, yes. Yes,
good old days.
MySpace.
Nah, they were not good old days. But I get it. I see where you were. How did you get anyone to come to your site?
You know, back in the day, you know, in which is not that long ago, 2008, but in internet years, that might as well be, you know, 1850. There weren't a lot of travel blogs out there. Maybe a handful. Most were just starting at that period. Mm-hmm. So I had first mover advantage in the space. There were only, you know, a couple dozen of us. So we all got to talking. We all knew each other. We would just share traffic. And so when everyone searched for a travel blog, you know, me and my friends were always on the top of the list. I really got into SEO very early on.
Mm-hmm.
I started writing, you know, very information-heavy list posts that did very well in Google. Then also happened to do really well on sites like StumbleUpon and Dig, because everyone likes to look at 20 great pictures of Iceland. So that really helped, you know, move.
Did you take all those photos yourself?
Yeah,
you did.
So I in the beginning, not always, but they've since been replaced. Yeah. You know.
And when you didn't, it was just 20 great pictures of Iceland, and then you just go and find 20 online, and
yeah,
you submit it to Dig
on Flickr and. Yeah.
That makes sense. That's pretty clever. What's the one best SEO thing that you did that worked for you back then?
Well, back then it was all about building links. So, I mean, the best thing I did was just getting other bloggers to give me links. You know, I would give them links in return, but asking, hey, I know you just came from Thailand. Can you put this link into my Thailand article on your website?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So anyone who'd blog about Thailand who posted photos, you'd say, hey, can you also include a link to this? I think it'll be helpful for your people, and it'll help me.
Yeah, and we were all friends. I mean, I'm still friends with many of them, but back when you have less than 100 people professionally blogging about travel, you know everyone. So okay. you're always doing favors for each other.
What are you doing now that works for you? I just want to skip ahead so that I know that at this point people are dropping out mentally and saying, it worked for him back then. It's not going to work for me now. It's just whatever he has to say is just too outdated. Give me one thing that works for you right now that anyone can do.
The best thing I do is network outside of my industry.
For example,
I go to World Domination Summit, which is a conference in Portland mm-hmm. with a lot of other entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
I talk to a lot of finance websites because there's an overlap between they want to save money and I want to save money.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to be the travel guy for everybody outside of travel.
So let's suppose you meet Mr. Money Mustache. He's got a really popular site on how to save money.
Mr. Money Mustache.
Sorry?
I would love to meet him. I just came across the site recently.
It's a fantastic site. Suppose you meet him. What do you do that will help you get more traffic?
I would probably do an interview or a guest post on his website showing his audience how they can take their themes of living more by spending less into the travel space. So when they're on their trip, how do they live for $50 a day? Because his whole lifestyle is...
I see. So you do a guest blog. You said that's one option, and I can see how you would make it fit. The other option is an interview. What do you mean by an interview?
Well, something similar to what we're doing
here. You would interview him on your site.
I would try to do both, right? So I'll interview you if you interview me. Find where we can both overlap. So
I see.
And I would also say anything I did on your site gets promoted on my site through my email list, through social media. You don't really want to make it a one-way street.
So should I have, when I asked you to do an interview, said, and you should interview me too for your site?
Well, I will definitely share everything we do, but, quite possibly.
Interesting. I should have also said, and I've seen other people do it, say, all right, but you should post it up on your site.
Oh, yeah, that's guaranteed. This will be on my site.
Interesting. So you know what? Jordan Harbinger, who I interviewed from The Art of Charm, he says that his guests do that all the time for him. And I think all he does is he asks them before he starts, will you also post this on your site, email it to your audience? I don't want to speak for him, but that's my understanding.
I know The Art of Charm, and I've heard him speak on other podcasts. I think that's what he does too, from my understanding.
I didn't realize that people all did that. Trade interviews and require almost a post of the interview on the site.
Yeah, well, I don't do it out of some, you give me this, I'll give you that. But we're all running a business here, right? So you're really helping me out by having me on your program. So, of course, I want to help you out and return the favor by showing my audience this interview and your website. But plus, I want my audience to see me talk, hear me talk, see what I'm doing all around the web. I don't want to just live in this little silo. So when I'm somewhere
here's the thing, though. I don't want to do a favor for you. I'm happy to do one for Ryan to an extent. Like, I will show up on a day that I don't want to do an interview or at a time that I don't want to do an interview for Ryan. But I don't want to do an interview that makes you feel so grateful to me that I don't know what, that anything, because that's not my goal. I want to almost hang you upside down by your ankles and shake every bit of knowledge from you, almost to the point where you go, should I have even said that? Remember we talked before we started?
Yeah.
That whatever you say, I'm going to keep in there. I want you to feel a little bit like you revealed more than you're comfortable with. And I wonder if maybe that's compatible with your interest. Maybe you're okay with that and you don't feel like you shared more than you're comfortable with and you're still grateful and I should take advantage of that. I mean, I don't mean with you, but I mean with some guests. So what's a big win for you? What are you hoping will happen from this?
Well, I hope your audience will be intrigued by my site, my book, and come over and, read my website and become new subscribers. This interview introduces me to a new audience. And that's what the goal of your networking outside your industry is all about, getting new readers. How do you grow? Well, you have to find places where nobody knows you. Nobody knows me. Maybe some people know me through your website, but not a lot, and vice versa.
Not even a clear funnel that's measurable. You're not saying, I would like to get 2,000 new hits from Mixergy and 70 books sold in this hour that I spend. It's more like, people don't know me in this world. I'm going to enter the world and just have some people get to know me. And if I keep blanketing the worlds that are surrounding mine, then my name will get out there. And at some point, I'll be like Mr. Money Mustache and people are hoping to get to know me and I'm making a killing with my site.
Isn't that what all advertising really is? I mean, what's the return on that Coke billboard ad? Nobody knows. But you do it anyway. You shouldn't do it out of some gratitude. You should do it because you want to do it. If you came to me and said, Matt, I really want to do an article about how I backpack Europe with my wife, I was like, okay, I could be interested in that. And maybe you send it to me and it's not very good and I decline it. But maybe it's really great. And I know my audience would really appreciate advice on how do you travel with your spouse without killing them. You know? So it's beneficial to you, but it's also beneficial to me. Okay? You want to shake me for knowledge? Well, that's good for your audience. So everybody sort of wins in this situation.
I think so, too. I think that the more you leave them with ideas that they hadn't heard before, the more you leave them with ideas that are really helpful for you, the more turtle stories that you reveal, yeah, the more they feel connected to you, curious, and grateful. All right. So I see now what you were doing in the early days to get some traffic. Let's talk about the first product that wasn't an affiliate sale, because it's kind of a cycle. You grow your audience, you grow your revenue, grow your audience, grow your revenue. So what's the first product?
The first product I had was How to Make Money with Your Travel Blog.
Okay.
And it was geared to other travel bloggers who kept constantly asking me, what are you doing that allows you to keep traveling without a real job, quote unquote, real job? And I said, okay, well, I'm going to put all this information in a book and put it out there. And I sold it. I had a couple of levels. You could buy just the book, and then you can buy a book and like call me up and I'll give you some one-on-one advice. And so those were really the first year, year and a half of revenue. As I was building the audience and growing affiliates, these were the two big products I had.
Okay. Is that the book that you started writing in the summer of 2010 when you met Ramit?
No, that was the book that just came out.
Oh, this current book.
This current book. So
what's the first one? What's the one where Ramit helped, Ramit Sethi helped shape your thinking on it?
Yeah, How to Travel the World on $50 a Day. It was originally a PDF that I had put together before Penguin bought it to publish it.
I see. And so how did meeting him help you?
Ramit, I mean, have you met Ramit?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Ramit is just a really smart guy who just lays it out there and is very direct. And I was asking for a guest post on the site because at the time he was still talking about personal finance. So I said, well, I got this book. It will help people travel a lot cheaper. It'd be great. And he goes, okay, tell me about your book. Who's the audience? You know, how are you going to market it? What's your subset? What's the funnel? You know, how's it going to help my readers? You know, what are they going to get out of it? What's your angle? And I just didn't have answers to really any of these questions.
See, people inspired you to write the book because they said, how do you do it?
Right.
He asked you, and so they were forcing you to think about what you do. He was forcing you to think outside of yourself to the person who's eventually going to read what you create.
Right.
So he was with that,
the marketing of it.
Okay. How do you figure out who that audience is? How do you say, you know, I'm not going to go after everyone who's traveling. I'm going to find this specific niche. And how do you figure that out?
I came home from that, you know, our meeting over a couple of years and thought, wow, I really know nothing. Because I, you know, I had only really been in it at that point for a year, year and a half, and had never thought about the business aspect of it. I just really was a guy who liked traveling. And after that, I thought, okay, well, who am I and what do I want to do? I want to help people travel more. So what age range am I looking for? What income level am I looking for? So I really thought about who my target audience was, you know, people who want to travel on cheap, who want to travel for an extended period of time, and are typically 18 to 35, right?
When you finally figured out what that avatar is, were there posts that you look back on and said, clearly, now that I know who I'm going after, that post doesn't fit that person?
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of general, in the early days, I was throwing spaghetti at the wall. And there are a lot of posts just about hotels and expensive tours that didn't really fit into the audience I was really looking for. Okay. And, you know, I was going more after the backpacker set. So I had to sort of take it down a notch to really focus on the bare bones travel.
I see.
You know, hostels and couch surfing and really hitting all that really hard.
Was that hard to do?
No, I mean, I was in that. You know, that's what I really like to do anyway.
Okay.
Nowadays, as I'm older, I like Airbnbs and hotels and all that. So I've moved up the value chain, so to speak. And so I've I don't really blog so much about the bare bones sort of travel. So I've sort of, as I've gotten older, I've shifted my demographic to be, you know, the 25, 50 range, where people are just want a cheap vacation.
I see. So it's no longer hostels where 30 people are sleeping in the same room on bunk beds. It's now Airbnb.
Yeah, yeah, there's still a small aspect of the backpacking, budget travel, but it's not as, well, it's all budget travel, but that sort of bare bones backpacking, you know, you're going to eat pasta in the hostel kitchen, not so predominant in my site. If you look at some of my suggested restaurants, some of those meals in itself can cost $30 to $50.
Hey, why? I was about to Google you to see a couple of the posts that you wrote back in the back when we're talking about right now. Why do you not use your full name often? Why is it Nomadic Matt instead of your full name, Matt Kepnes? I want to make
you
sure.
Yeah, I just right. started. You did. I just started as Nomadic Matt, and it just grew into this moniker that everybody knows and recognizes. So I just stick with it. Makes it easier.
Is it Kepnes too a hard name? Is that one of the issues?
No, it's really just I'm a creature of habit. Okay. And I just became this Nomadic Matt guy. So that's sort of my travel persona. It's my pen name.
All right. I think I see one of the posts that you wrote on, let's see, Ramit's site. This was how to use airline miles to fly business class without even stepping foot on an airplane.
Yeah. That was, well, wow. When was that? June 2010? Mm-hmm. July? Somewhere around there.
Is that a headline that you wrote or is it a headline that he wrote?
I think mine was how to fly business class for free, and then he tweaked that.
I see. One of the benefits of doing these kinds of articles on other people's sites is that you get their editorial experience.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah. So from guest posting on other websites, I've learned a lot about writing itself, how to craft better headlines, how to just create better subheadings and headings. And especially going back to what we talked about earlier, right? The detail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as an expert, you can sometimes overlook that, you know, the details that your mind makes assumptions about. So when I'm on all these sites, I was like, but the detail. What about this resource? What do I need to include for all of that? So it's really just made me take that back into my site. So I now write a lot. Most of my posts are really long and really detailed and very heavily linked to resources and companies and case studies and older posts linking back, you know, because you know, I create these 3,000, 4,000 words posts on what to do, and it's pretty much the definitive thing.
So let me ask you this. Here's something that most writers don't appreciate this question. I remember even asking Alexia for TechCrunch. I don't feel she got it. It's not easy to write long posts like this, right? We say to bloggers, write epic posts, write great things that people will remember, go long and deep. How do you do that?
I mean, it takes hours upon hours to write a blog post like that. You know, I can say I'm going to write a post on an update post on Ramit's site.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so I would take that post and I would probably look at it. I would sketch out an outline and make this very general article, and then I would send it to a friend and have them read it and for them to fill in the holes. And I think not a lot of bloggers do that. They write the article, they put some links into resources. But if we really want to make it epic and detailed and, you know, this go deep, have somebody who has no idea about what you're doing read it, because they're new. So they're going
to... I get how that improves. First of all, that's the kind of tip I'm looking for. That's a way to improve it. What about where you come up with the ideas, how you structure the content? How do you put together something like this?
I mean, I get the idea based on a lot of questions or new things I discover. So if I start, you know, sailing around... Recently, I sailed around the British Virgin Islands. I learned how to do it on the jeep. So you kind of have to go in with that journalist mentality. There's a question, you need an answer. And then you want to structure it by saying, here is my experience. Here's the details of that experience. And here's how you can do it too. And that's usually how typically I structure these posts.
Okay.
Right? I talk about why I wanted to do it, what I learned, you know, how I did it. Because people want to know, like, how did you do it too? And I'd say, okay, here's how you can replicate that process.
Okay. And then do you start to reuse some of your content on other sites? You can't keep coming up with these great ideas on command for all the sites that you write for. You wrote for, I saw Huffington Post also. I'm looking through my notes here to see if I can come up with others. Featured in CNN. How do you do that?
Well, there's very few travel ideas that are quote-unquote original.
Okay.
Right? And there are certain tips that are good for years and years. But it's the story and how you tell that and, you know, taking new information that changes. Because travel is a constantly changing industry. Airlines go out of service, rules change, countries become a hotspot. Lots of things are always in flux, which is good because then that means that, you know, there's always a new spin on an old idea. But yeah, you know, I'll take tips I write on my site and put it on other sites because, you know, it's...
I might repackage it.
Yeah, I might take the puzzle and move it around a little bit.
What about how you said that some of the content actually goes out of date? For example, I'm looking at one of the posts where it says, if you rent movies on Netflix, you can get 1,500 Advantage miles from American Airlines. That, I don't think, exists anymore. Do you go back and re-edit your posts?
Yeah, I'll either re-edit... Mm-hmm. I'll write a whole new version of that article and redirect the old links and the old post to the new one.
Oh, I see. Really? So someone who tries to go to the old post will now be brought to the more current post.
Yeah. Right? And I have a series of articles. Every couple of years, I take a Eurorail train pass and I go through Europe to see, does the pass save you money?
I see.
So there's three. So if you start at the old one, there's actually a big thing on top that says, this post is out of date. Click here to see the newest version. And that bumps you to the newest one.
Every year you do that. Every other year.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like this is just too much? I'm done traveling. I just want to be able to buy the big package of toilet paper and the big everything, toothbrush, toothpaste, and so on. Do you ever feel like I'm done, but now I'm locked into this because I am Nomadic Matt. It's not Nomadic website for people who are nomads unite. It's me, my name on it.
So behind me is this apartment I have that I'm kind of in once in a while. I love being on the road.
You still do. You don't get burned out. You don't feel like that's it. I'm done.
No, I have to clean and domesticate, and I now have a wardrobe that lasts a couple of seasons, and it's also foreign and weird to me. You know, I love being on the road. I go on the road every couple of months. I come back for a couple of weeks. I'm back on the road. I have a gypsy soul, and I am perfectly happy.
Must too. I'm like fidgeting and itching, and I can't sit still today. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, see? All this talk of travel.
I think it might be because before you called, I just didn't want to. Well, I didn't even want to do anything. I just wanted to sit.
See?
It is contagious. Hey, how do you figure out the products that you could create? I understand that the first one was people said you're good at this thing. How do you know what to do next?
I use my email list. So I look at basically what are common questions.
Mm-hmm.
What are people really asking me about? Mm-hmm. And then I say, okay, well, let's put a product into that. So, you know, last year I created a guide on travel hacking, which is the art of using points and miles to get free flights and hotels.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people really want to know about that. But it's such a complicated, in-depth thing that you can't write one blog post on it.
Mm-hmm.
So that thing I wrote on Ramit's site is kind of similar.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much going on. There are websites just dedicated to this one aspect.
To nothing but how to get more miles.
Right. I mean, so I couldn't just do a blog post. I did a book. And so that was my next product.
What do you sell yours for?
$24.99.
I'm looking now at Chris Guillebeau. He has something called Frequent Flyer Master.
Yeah, and he's got a new thing called Upgrade Unlocked.
Yeah. He's smart with the upsell. I see an upsell. His shopping cart is a little out of date. He sells his for more expensive, for twice as much as you. And the other one is even more. It has three tiers from what I remember, right?
Yeah.
Why are you selling yourself for so cheap? Why do you have anything for under 30 bucks?
You know, it goes back to who your demographic is, right? Every one of my people are cheap budget travelers. So for them, you know, I don't know the demos of Chris's audience, but maybe they're people like you who have a home, who maybe have more disposable income. So 50 bucks for a course is fine.
Okay.
I have people who think $50 is one day in Thailand. So it's part my audience, but also I sort of make it up on a volume base. So having it 50 bucks means I'll sell 100 a month. And if I drop it down to 25 and I sell 300 a month, I'd rather sell it, right, 25.
So I see.
And that's my thinking on it. You know, so I've tried to have higher priced products. When that book came out, it was originally $50.
And it didn't. How did it do?
It did pretty well. I mean, I sold a lot of copies, a little about 1,000. But then I sort of tapped the audience who would do that, right? Now what happens? What about the people at the lower price point? So I reduced it till I sort of found that equilibrium where it sort of made everybody happy.
We just recorded a course with Ryan Delk of Gumroad. I know you use their software to sell your books. He does growth and business development for Gumroad. I asked him, I said, just tell me about pricing. Nothing but pricing. Spend an hour, teach us how to price things right, how to create tiers. What's the advantage of creating tiers? And look through all of Gumroad's data and tell us specifically, people who created tiers, how much extra money did they make? What's the advantage of doing it? Where is it a problem? And so on. I should say that that's available to anyone who goes to mixergpremium.com. That course is fan-freaking-tastic because he is. And while I'm talking about it, I should also say that if you're interested in guest blogging, I had Annabelle Candy on. She taught guest blogging. You should do a search on Mixergy for her name, Annabelle Candy, or guest blogging, and you'll see she is fantastic at teaching you how to do this. We're telling a story here. If you want to know more of the how-to, get those two courses. They're Mixergy Premium courses, and they're available to you right now. Should you have gone after a higher, more expensive audience, like instead of the backpacker audience, the business traveler audience?
You know, should I have? You know, if I wanted to make more money, sure. But that's not where my passion lies. You know, I have friends who love luxury resorts. I have friends who are the business travelers and like the amenities of hotels and the concierge service. I enjoy backpacking and budget travel and hanging out and eating food in tiny street stalls around the world. So I can make more money, but I wouldn't really be passionate about it.
Are you a little disgusted by my emphasis on money in this interview? Like, one of my first questions had to do with money. The first thing I did before we got into the story was talk about TopTal and bring in some revenue.
No, money makes the world go around.
All right.
But, you know, I would say, you know, if I had $50 million, you know, what am I going to do with it all? I mean, there is a limit to how much I can spend. I'm not really a consumer. So I would, you know, there's only so much I can spend on my type of travel. At the end of the day, you want to have enough money to do everything you want to do. After that, you're just being greedy.
I like to be a little greedy. I think it's okay.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that you're not disgusted by it.
No.
You are a really smart marketer, though. I'm looking at your site, and you have email subscription forms. Not excessive, but they're on there. The site is beautifully designed, and one of the smart things that it does is if I scroll past the images and the links on the right margin, it brings them back and holds them steady, so I have an opportunity to see the step-by-step guide to planning a trip, the guides to knowing where you're going, the companies that you use to stay on the road. Those companies are affiliate links, right?
Yeah.
Right? So you are smart. Where did you pick this stuff up? Where do you learn how to do it?
I read a lot. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and, you know, such as yourself.
What are some of the places that you listen to?
I like Pat Flynn's Smart Passive Income.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Ferriss's podcast is really good.
Mm-hmm.
I like James Altucher's, Lewis Howes. And actually, a really good one that's not really directly business related is the Alpha Male Club. by James Swanick.
I don't know that one.
And a friend of mine, Aussie guy, he's actually had the Art of Charm guy on it. When his about, you know, being a better man, but there, he has a lot of the podcasts.
Oh, I know him. Of course I know the guy. I met him in Argentina. He does travel. Alpha Male Club, I'm checking out right now.
Yeah. So a lot of his podcasts deal with, you know, how do you have influence? How do you network? You know, how do you write better copy and just be a more personal person? And a lot of that can be moved over into business, you know, pretty easily. You know, you can apply that to business.
But these guys aren't teaching you how to have the margin, the image on the right, how to get people to convert into your travel hacking guide and buy this and create a drip campaign, which we'll talk about. Where do you learn that?
I go to business conferences. I've hired experts to teach me.
Okay.
One of the reasons why I have hired Ryan, you know, I think it was Jack Welch who said a smart CEO is not someone who's necessarily smart. He's someone who hires smarter people than him.
I see. So who have you hired for marketing?
Ryan, I've worked with. I hired a team to help test conversions last year. I hired a friend to help me with crowdfunding. I did a Kickstarter for an app. So,
who's the team that you hired for conversions?
I don't want to say that one.
You don't? Why not?
Because they work for somebody who doesn't like it when they take on side projects. So,
oh, I think I know who you took on. I can't believe you were able to hire them.
So I'm going to keep that.
And do you still use them?
No, I mean, I hire them on a contract basis. So
can I put a name here and just nod? I promise I won't tell anyone.
Okay.
Okay, I'll just put one name right there.
Yep.
Wow, that's really good people. And I was going to say, would you at least tell somebody in private who it is? And I don't think you're going to want to do that if they contact you. Maybe if they're a friend of yours, you'll tell them.
I ask their permission before I give them a referral.
Yeah, I get it. Wow. All right. So you're really good at this. Now take me through what you've built. Before we started, you told me a little bit about the drip campaign. Talk about that here. What happens? Somebody gives you their email address. What's the first thing that happens?
They get a welcome email from me, thanking them, you know, and I basically them, if there's anything I can help you with, let me know. And I learned this trick from Derek Halpern from Social Triggers. It was a great way for people, because they're always going to ask you questions. So then I get ideas for blog posts and products because I kind of see what questions are being asked the most. But travel is an interesting industry. If you're running a marketing company or fitness or finance, every day people deal with their business, their health, and their money. You're not really concerned about backpacking Europe until you're going to backpack Europe. So there's a lot of turnover in travel because there's a constant stream of people, but you know, you don't need me every day. So I looked at how people plan their trips. They get really excited. They kind of want to buy every book. They buy the guidebook. They might be zealous and book their flight right away. And then they forget about their trip. And then they are like, oh, I have to go. I'm going to Europe. And the next month, I have to go buy my backpack, get the travel insurance, buy the gear. So the campaign is sort of built along that. It's very heavy on products and, you know, practical advice right away. Then it moves into inspirational emails and then goes back into the products, reminding people that, hey, you know, if you want to help support the site, if you have found the information useful, please use my affiliate links. Here are some books that can help you. Be sure to get travel insurance before you go.
And that's an affiliate link too.
Yeah.
So wait, so you email them and you say, first thing is, welcome to my mailing list. If you have any questions, hit reply.
Yeah.
And that's how you get the questions that help you come up with guides and help you come up with blog posts. Do you respond to all of them?
I respond to all my email.
So if somebody goes into Nomadic Matt right now and has a question like, where should I go? How do I find a hostel for Eastern Europe or for Russia or for Cuba? Cuba might be more interesting.
Yeah.
Well, what do you say about Cuba, for example? You probably don't have one yet, a post about that.
No. Go through Canada and Mexico and don't get a stamp on your passport.
I see. But you wouldn't you just know what you know, but you wouldn't do extra research for, just for that email?
No. Occasionally someone will say to me, I really want to use this company. Have you heard of them? And I'm saying no, and I will go look them up. But not too often. You know, okay. A lot of people will ask me stuff that's really out of my purview. You know, luxury travel stuff, river cruises. I just tell them, you know, that's not something I really focus on, but I know someone who does, and I will just sort of refer them off to this other writer or blogger.
All right. Okay. So I can see how that keeps you from being overwhelmed. You don't have to know everything. A lot of what you've already written is applicable when people ask you questions. The rest you can do a little bit of research on, or you can say it's just not part of my focus. Terrific. That's the first email. The next thing you right. do is, sorry?
Right. Well, going back to that, you can't know everything about travel. That's like saying I know everything about science. People specialize, you know, for a reason. The next email, they get my top blog posts, my favorite ones, to help them along their way. Then they get a list of the 25 companies I think they should use. And then they get my book, How to Travel the World on $50 a Day. And then they get cheap flights. They get my travel hacking book. I have like a 24 email series.
Okay.
And there's credit cards.
How much experimentation goes into that?
A lot.
A lot.
Yeah, so I mean that has been refined over a couple of years.
How do you experiment with it? Here, wait, you use Infusionsoft, right?
I use AWeber.
Use AWeber.
Yeah,
that's even harder. And so, do you do broadcast to people who are part of the onboarding drip email?
So you get two emails from me. You get that email sequence, and then you get a weekly email from me featuring travel deals as well as this week's blog post. And about what I'm doing in my life.
I see. And so you kind of got it. And you're okay with someone who's on the third email of your drip getting whatever happens to be the weekly email too. If
right.
it happens yeah. to be on the same day, you just accept it.
I know. I have it set up so you get the drip Friday through Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And then I send out the weekly email usually on Thursday.
So that's so how you avoid double emailing.
Yeah, you never get an email.
Here's the problem I've had with testing drip emails. I know the power of them, but suppose you think, hey, you know what? I would like to try, I have four emails. I'd like to try a different email as number two and then have five emails. You start pushing those up. Do you start just rearranging it? But you can't because that means that people who are already on email number, what I just lost track of the numbers that I got. But you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, so that was really hard in the beginning because I would constantly shift things around.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm pretty happy with the order I have now because I know the consumer life cycle so much.
So what did you do back then when you couldn't? When somebody already got number three and you were adding number two and you didn't want them to accidentally get number three again?
You know, they would get number three again and I would just say, oh, sorry for the double email.
You're just accepting that that's what it is.
Yeah, I just accepted that's what it was.
I see. And when you test, it's just what increases the most revenue, and at times maybe it's most engagement.
Yeah. You know, and what I have found with my audience,
mm-hmm.
right, people don't leave. My open rate and is usually steady between, depending on the season, 25 to 35%.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the new drip emails are always like, you know, 60, 50%. But my unsubscribe rate, 0.1.
So even when they're not traveling, they just stay on the mailing?
They stay there. And I will get emails from people to saying, Matt, I used your website last year. It was super helpful. We're planning a trip again. Can I get some more advice? So I don't really want to be too salesy because I know I have people. Once my advice helps them, they're going to use me again. So I don't really want to inundate them, drive them away, you know, in the short term.
You know what? I know one of your goals is to get people to come to the site and check out the book, but I just want them to go to the site and check out the subtle marketing that's still really effective. Like, I'm now on your travel guides to Costa Rica travel tips.
Right.
I scroll down and that tab bar that asks me for my email address stays up so elegantly, so simply. It doesn't feel aggressive, but it's there. It's present. You, speaking of Costa Rica, you ran a contest to try to grow your mailing list and involve Costa Rica. What was that contest?
I gave away a free trip to Costa Rica. So okay. You would have to create a video as to why you wanted to go to Costa Rica. I picked my favorites, and then I had the audience pick a top three. And then me and a friend picked the top one.
Okay.
So that, yeah, was pretty fun. That was the first big contest that I ever did.
And how'd it go?
Well, you know, it went really well, except I was in Australia at the time.
That's what I'm getting traveling. At. Uh-huh.
You know, I was on a boat in the Whitsunday Islands, and my site crashed. So for a couple of days, my site was down in the middle of this contest.
Where you were trying to grow your mailing list, trying to look professional, trying to keep people engaged, suddenly you disappeared for 2 days.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do because you're on the other side of the planet, and it's tough anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have internet. The only reason I knew it was down because we moved past a cell tower, and then my phone lit up like a Christmas tree. And your site's down. I can't vote. What's going on? And yeah, it worked itself out. I think it was just a server overload from all the traffic. But yeah, I definitely upgraded my server after that.
How do you grow your mailing list when the contest is create a video?
So at the time, when was this? This was early. Is this early 2010? Sorry, I take so many trips. It's often hard to place them in dates. I think it was 2011. I actually did not really have a mailing list at this point. The summer.
So it was just about engagement then. Just create videos, show that you're alive, show that people care.
I think I had people sign up for they liked my Facebook page or follow me on Twitter or something really easy and cheap. I was working in with a tour company at the time, so they just wanted the brand awareness of it. As most probably marketers always say, the great mistake I ever made was not collecting emails from day one.
I see that. We asked you, April Dykeman on the team asked you, what's the big mistake? You said, it's that. What advice do you have? It's start your email list right away, plaster that email sign up all over the place. Why is email so important?
Because RSS is, you know, kind of dead, and everybody checks their email multiple times a day. We are, as a society, email addicted. It's the new mail. You don't get letters in the mail, you get emails. You don't get, you know, a lot of discount offers. Yeah, you still get all that junk mail, but now you get all the junk email too. We live by our email, so people always check it. You can miss a Facebook update because their algorithm will change and suddenly five people see it. Whether or not you respond to my email, you see it. Everyone, somebody says, oh, I didn't see it. Nah, they saw it.
Here's another thing that I notice when I'm on your site. There's a tab for forums. It takes me to forums.nomadicmat.com. How helpful is it to have a forum on a site like yours?
It's been really helpful. We just started it earlier this year, and you know, it's taken some time to grow and build, but it's been really helpful. The community has really liked it, and it allows an outlet, you know, for me to sort of deflect some of the travel questions to the community. Mm-hmm. Going back to what we talked about before, if I don't know the answer, well, maybe somebody in the community does, and so I encourage people to post there and share their travel stories there, and you know, just make friends.
Why did you do it on your own platform? Well, actually, what is this? What software are you using?
IP forums.
Oh, so I don't know this. Oh, there I see it. IP board.
IP board.
Why do it there as opposed to on Facebook?
Well, you get the traffic boost. You know, Google will eventually index all these forums, and so people will search to the site. But things can get lost on Facebook pretty easily. You know, here content can live and be searchable and accessible in a way that I don't think you can have on, you know, in a Facebook group or just on my fan page.
All right. Suppose somebody's listening to us. They've followed a lot of the advice, and one thing that they're shaky about is forums. But they say, all right, fine. This guy Matt got some results. I'm going to try forums too. What's the best advice that you can give them about getting forums done right?
So the best advice I got was from my friend Steve Cam, who runs a website, Nerd Fitness, because he's got this gigantic forum community.
Yeah, really active.
Really active. So I said, what's your secret? And he said, run a lot of community contests and giveaways, you know, challenges, as he calls it, right? So get a way to get people to compete against themselves and against each other and give away prizes.
What are some of the competitions?
That I've had?
Yeah.
I've had people, so I've done two so far. I do one a quarter, and I've only had this for 6 months. So the first one did well, the second one not so well. But I've had people just do, the first one was do one thing that got you closer to a trip. It could be anything, from buying a guidebook to booking a flight, you know, to researching the destination, to going somewhere and buying a train ticket, whatever. And then just upload a photo of proof of it. So that everyone was really jazzed about that because, oh, you know, people say, well, I don't know. Should I do that? You would come on and say, no, you can do it. Look, I did this too. And, you know, nobody wants to be left out of the crowd.
So one thing that they did that got them closer to a trip, it might be getting a job, it might be going on a website and checking something out or registering for something.
Yes, getting a travel credit card, opening a bank account where they were going to save money in. I was very loose with the rules.
And so you emailed the audience and you encouraged them to enter this contest, and everyone who's entering is commenting on the forums and encouraging more people to talk.
Right. So to win, you had to be a forum member. You couldn't just email me and say, okay, I did it. You had to be posted on the forums. Yes. You had to be a forum member. And so that was sort of a way to drive engagement and drive my audience to the forums. And also let the people know the forums exist. So, you know, I mean, I think that's my greatest challenge is how do I integrate the forums more into the site itself?
Where can I see this? What's a search term that I can use to search the forums and find it?
You know, I haven't looked at its analytics in a while, so I don't know what's popping in from search.
Okay. All right. Why don't I try contest? What's the other one that didn't do so well?
I wanted people to go out and explore their city. So I said, come up a list of five things that you always want to do in your city and go do it over the course of like 2 weeks and show picture proof. We only had about 10 or 12 people actually do it. So
why do you think that one didn't do so well?
It requires more effort. You have to get up and go do five activities.
I see. As opposed to, I do see that the forum thread right now, travel action challenge, one step closer to your next adventure. And here, the first big response that caught my eye was from someone who took a screenshot of verify his email address to complete. Oh, I see what it is. He signed up for Bluebird by American Express and put a screenshot in the forum.
Right.
And this is a newish member, only has four posts. So this encouraged him to get started.
Yeah.
What's the prize that you gave?
I gave away copies of my books and consulting time with me and t-shirts I had.
So it doesn't even have to be an elaborate, expensive thing. You don't even have to fly them to Costa Rica.
Nope. I'm sure if I did that one, I've already got a lot more responses.
If you, what do you mean? Because of the prize?
Yeah.
The prize would have gotten more people. Yeah, I get it. How much did it cost you to fly people to Costa Rica that time?
I used my miles, so $2.50 in taxes. This year, I do an annual survey of all my readers to figure out what I'm doing right and what I'm doing wrong. Mm-hmm. I think this is really important for people to do. Because so often we can get casual feedback throughout the year, but I think we should all sort of take stock at some point in the year and say, who is my audience? Have they changed? You know, what do they like? What was really successful? And what do they say, Matt, you really need to fix this because I'm about to walk out the door. And actually one thing I've noticed throughout the years is that my audience has shifted older. And the average vacation, the average travel one of my readers takes is between 0 to 4 weeks per year. So I don't even have a big audience of backpackers and long-term travelers. But for this contest, I emailed my list and said, okay, everybody who goes will be entered in to get a free flight. I got over 6,000 responses. I was like, oh, whoa. Normally that I get like 700 or 800, and now I have to go through 6,000. Great data, but it took me weeks to go through that.
It's interesting that $1,000 gets you such a response, and it's the chance to win $1,000. I still don't understand why people are so drawn to contests, especially if it's not a contest of skill. A skill contest I get.
Yeah.
But it's just, I guess it gets attention.
Yeah. So I got some great reader feedback.
All right, this has been a fantastic conversation. Let's go back to your goal here. I've already shaken you upside down by the ankles. I've learned as much as possible, and you've been really considerate and thoughtful and organized in the way that you built up your site, so I got a lot of value out of it myself. One of the things that you told me is you are going to create a trip. You're going to do a book tour using the techniques that you teach in the book. How do people find out about the book tour?
So if you go to my site, it's the second blog post, but as of tomorrow, there will be a dedicated page on the navigation bar that says book tour.
Okay. So you just have to go to nomadicmat.com, and somewhere on there, there'll be a book tour.
Right. So it's on the homepage right now, but there will be a more dedicated.
By the time this is out. So let's see what I'll be doing, where I'll be going. Oh, dude, you're going a ton of places. How many places is this?
Right. So I'm going to over 40 cities over the course of 4.5 months, all around the States. Big road trip. Also an excuse for me to go travel the States and visit places I've never been.
Oh, in New York, you're going to be at the Strand bookstore. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I love that place.
I think it's a great bookstore.
And what do? You sit there and you read your book?
I usually give a talk. So this time I will give a talk about how I got into travel for people who don't know me. And then I'll talk about how travel has changed over the last couple of years. It became even cheaper. And then I take Q&As, and then there's a book signing.
Who organized all these places for you?
The PR person for Penguin Books.
I see.
So I pick the cities, and they're calling up the bookstores along the way.
Okay. All right. Nomadic Matt, thank you so much for doing this interview. How do you feel it went for you?
I thought it was really good. I hope your audience gets something out of it. And, you know, I like talking about the businessy side of travel blogging. And that's not something I get to do a lot. So
I like that too.
Exactly too.
That's my favorite part of it. All right. So before you go, let's negotiate. Where is this going to go on your site? How do we get traffic from Mixergy from this interview?
So this will go on my Facebook. It'll go on my Twitter. And I'm going to do a dedicated post that says, here's where I've been on the web talking about the book. So you'll get a nice link.
How about at the top of that? I hate when people put me third or fifth, and then I link from my Twitter account to it. And basically what I'm doing is promoting the people who are up above me, because who's going to scroll down to mine? Can we be at the top of the list?
I was going to put you last, but since you put it that way, I'll put you up top.
All right. Done deal. And then I will tweet that out. So we've got now this little circle of support going.
Yeah. A little virtual handshake right here.
All right, Matt, thank you so much for doing this. Everyone out there, go see Matt in person and ask him some personal questions the way that I got to ask him here. I think the way that you built this business is really, it's inspiring. I think it's something that other people can duplicate. You may not be as impressive an entrepreneur as the founder of Airbnb who are on here. Those guys are fantastic. They've built something that is out of reach for most people. But what you built, Matt, anyone should be able to do it. So if someone's out there listening, if I have one holdout out there who says, I still haven't started a business because I can't for one reason or another, they should freaking listen to this interview, and then they should slap themselves and wake up and realize that they could do something, that they could build a business. What do you think of that?
You know, if I can do it while dividing my time between focusing on the website and traveling, somebody who actually spends some time focusing could do it.
That's a really good point. You know what? If your hobby was anything else, it'd be so much easier. If your hobby was going and working out of luxury hotels, the internet would be fantastic. The screenshot, the photos would be out of this world, and people would be aspiring to get there. But when you go to places and you're living on $50 a day, it's easy to get distracted by all the people who are in your hostel. It's easy to have bad internet. You're right. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you can be on a boat in Australia and your website can go down. There's nothing you can do about
right.
it. Right? Yeah. And so, you know, I only really put, you know, 100% into this starting about 2010. So there were years where I was just like, build the website, go hang out with those hot Swedish girls that just invited me to the beach.
Are you dating anyone now?
No, I'm currently single. Right.
Did you have a move like you use when you go out in a hostel and meet people? Do you ask them, hey, what's your book? You want to steal my line?
Yeah.
What book are you reading?
Hey, what's your book? Yeah, I think I'll take
what's
that.
What's your book? Hey, it's like, well, here's mine. How to travel 50 bucks a day.
Is that my book you're reading?
Right.
Why? What do you think of that book? It's good. I wrote it.
I see. Are you looking for someone or are you just traveling around?
My only goal right now is the book tour. I'm recently single, so I'm just going to focus my energy on doing the book tour, spreading the message, and just that.
All right. Well, it's fantastic to have you on here. I see that you're going to be here in April. I hope I get to meet you in person.
Be great.
You bet. Thank you all for being a part of it. Go see Matt. Bye, everyone.